Welcome to Steppin' Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon.
Everybody, my name's Sue Supriano, and my guest is Diane Wilson. Diane is a very independent woman. She's a shrimper, a fourth-generation fisher person, you say fisherman, from Sea Drift, Texas, who has sunk her own boat in defiance of toxics. And so you're going to tell me that story, Diane, because it's you're going to tell me your story.
Okay. My story started probably about 13 years ago. I had never been involved in environmental battles before. I was a commercial fisherman. I had five children. And one day a shrimper brought me an Associated Press story. And it was that our county, Calhoun County, which is a very small county and known for absolutely nothing, we don't have anything outstanding in that county. We were the number one county in the nation for toxic disposal to the land. And so I, on the basis of that information, I just called a meeting to discuss what those numbers meant and why the community had known anything about it. Because we've got a lot of chemical companies down there. We got like DuPont and Alcoa and Formosa Plastics and BP Chemical, and so we had all these chemical companies, but we had no idea that we were ranking number one in the nation. And so I called a meeting, and it was the repercussions from just calling a meeting that probably astounded me almost as much as ranking number one in the nation, because suddenly I had people that I had never met in my life. I had never met the banker. He had never personally ever said a word to me. And suddenly, down at the fish house where I was working, and I had my boat, the commissioners were coming down, the mayors were coming down, the presidents of the banks were coming down, economic development was coming down, and they were telling me to call off the meeting and get it out of town. And basically, I found out that the reason why they wanted me to just cancel it was because that county was fixing to get one of the biggest chemical expansions that Texas had ever had. And Texas is known for chemical plants. And it was one of the biggest ones they had ever had. And it was Formosa Plastics, and they were giving them $250 million in tax abatements just to bring them down to Texas.
How big a town is Sea Drift, Texas?
Sea Drift's got about 1,000 people.
Whoa, that's really small.
Very small.
And how did you get this information that it had the greatest toxicity?
It was a shrimper that, matter of fact, he had three different types of cancer. He had tumors all over his arm, but he brought me an Associated Press story that was in the newspaper. And like I said, that was the first time I had ever saw anything in the paper about any of the chemical plants, and the information it absolutely astounded me.
Mm-hmm. So people just hadn't put it together.
No, they had not put it together. We had no information. That was the first time we'd ever had any information.
So they were trying to talk you, all these important people in town were trying to talk you out of having this meeting.
Yes.
But I guess you weren't talked out of it.
No, I certainly didn't. I was very, very puzzled about why they were trying to talk me out of it. And then I even had the banker of the president of the bank came down and he said, I wasn't fixing to have a little roast to Target Industry, was I? And I said, why, no, I wasn't. And so I invited all the politicians that I ever knew or could think of. And matter of fact, I got them all to come to the meeting. But the day of the meeting, every single one of them canceled out. And even a couple of them went on TV to announce that they were not coming to the meeting. Mm-hmm. So
what do you think happened to cause them to do that?
Oh, they got word that it was a controversial. It would be a controversial because this is where industry, which was the reason for the pollution, they are the financial basis in that community. That's where you get the jobs. That's where half the mayors of the towns have contracts with them. The senators have got contracts with them. The justice of the peace have contracts. So it's like the industry is a financial bigwig there, and it would look like they were supporting me by even showing up to a meeting.
Mm-hmm. And they wanted their money more than they wanted wanted to support you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's so who did come to the meeting?
Well, I just got a few local people that kind of showed up, but by the second meeting, I had probably about a delegation from Chamber of Commerce, Economic Development, the mayors, city council people. They all showed up by meeting, and they absolutely disrupted it, blasted it. They said I was a radical, that I was an emotional woman, that I could not carry on like this, that there was only one window of opportunity for economic development, and I was destroying the community. And it got totally, the meeting got totally out of hand. And in matter of fact, I had the mayor screaming at me, and the economic development fellow and Chamber of Commerce was screaming at me. And I had never been attacked like that before, and I was totally shocked with the approach, the way they came across. And it was like you couldn't ask any questions. You couldn't, if you weren't with everybody, then you were to keep your mouth shut.
Mm-hmm. So did you have any support?
Eventually, the only support I got was a environmental lawyer out of Houston, and I got a Houston environmental group that kind of helped me. I could call and ask them questions, but locally I tried to get directors for my group, because you know I was forming a group, so I had to get directors. And then the company threatened to sue me, so every one of my directors quit, and so I didn't have, everybody was afraid to join the group. And I even had, every once in a while I would get someone, I think they were truly concerned, but then their husbands would tell them that they had to resign, they had to quit as a member, because it was just controversial. And you know, and they might lose a contract. You know, this one fellow was putting in carpet for the company, and he said, I'll lose my job, you have to get out of there. And so I basically lost most of my members, and I lost all my directors.
Wow. Well, that's really incredibly brave of you. Uh-huh. So was it mostly women then who were coming, who were caring about this issue and coming to the meetings and before they quit anyway?
Eventually, that's all I had left was women, a couple of women directors. And I remember one time I told my lawyer, because I told him, I said, I don't have any more directors. I don't have anybody, you know, and legally, because the companies, the chemical companies, they want to make sure you're all legal. And they're like, do you have your directors? Do you have your bylaws? And so I had to get a director. And remember my lawyer, he said, well, you know some women down there, just get a woman down there. And I said, yeah, but the problem is they've got a husband, and the husband says, you know, you can't do that. And he said, well, get a poor divorced woman. And so that's what I did. I went and got a poor divorced woman and made her my director. But I only had these two women, yeah.
Wow, that's really says a lot for the women.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Definitely. And certainly says a lot for you that you hung in through all that. Uh-huh. And I guess that's not the end of the story by any means.
No, no.
And when was this happening? In what year?
It started in 1989, and it's still ongoing. I've had some successes, some losses, but it's still ongoing right now. So this has been about 13-year battle.
And the toxicity is just as bad still?
Well, we've got probably one of the biggest underwater Superfund sites right there in the middle of Lavaca Bay, and we have one of the biggest PVC companies with probably one of the worst records, especially in Taiwan and Delaware and Louisiana and Texas, and they're discharging into one of the most pristine estuaries. As a matter of fact, it's so Texas Parks and Wildlife, they don't even allow shrimp boats to go up there and drag because this is what they call the nursery area. And but they'll allow a chemical company to put, 10 to 15 million gallons a day of wastewater up in there. And so we have quite a few chemical companies, and they all make the bays their dumping site, and that is an issue with me because our entire fishing community, it all depends on those bays, and those bays were there a long time before we ever came around, and they are what is at stake in the communities. The communities are dying because Seadrift, which is predominantly just a fishing community, when the bay goes, they go. And matter of fact, a couple years ago, we had one of the largest dolphin die-offs in the Mammal Stranding Network, which is it's probably the only group that legally can record dolphin deaths. And the Mammal Stranding Network, they found that was the largest die-off they had ever recorded. Mm-hmm. And dolphins were just belly up all over that bay.
Oh, how heartbreaking! Yes. How awful! Are there many women who are fishermen, fisherwomen?
No, there are not very many. I'm probably one of a very, very, very few. It's a very, very masculine world down there, and they. Matter of fact, I wrote a book and I called it "The Stupid Woman" because I have been called a stupid woman my entire life, and that's kind of the approach that a lot of the men take about women. Is like they don't have much value, and they're not entirely welcome out there on that bay. But like I said, I've managed to niche my way in there. I'm fourth generation, and my daddy was one, and my grandfather was one, and his daddy before him, and also I was good at building nets. Mm-hmm. So, I'm one of the few women out there. There's not too many.
Mm-hmm. Are your kids still live with you?
I've got five kids, and I've got two that are still at home. They've all grown and left except David and Santana. Mm-hmm. So I still got a 15 and a 16-year-old at home.
And you're still fishing?
I'm fishing for drum. I don't have a shrimp boat anymore because I was attempting to sink my shrimp boat on top of one of their illegal discharges, and the Coast Guard confiscated it right before I sunk it. But I had removed the motor because if you sink a boat and you got a diesel engine in it, you can put diesel fuel out in the bay, and I didn't want it said that I was a polluter, and they would have definitely said, that woman is a polluter. So I made darn sure I took that motor out. And so, once you don't have an upkeep on your boat, and I didn't have any money to put the motor back in, so the boat, eventually I lost the boat, but I fish for drum on a skiff right now. That's what I do.
So what happened with support that you got or didn't get in fighting this fight against toxicity? How, I mean, in 1989, that's like 13 years ago now. So it's been a lot of years, and it sounds like you've been really independent all your life,
that's
for sure.
That's right.
It's really incredible.
Yeah.
So how did it go in terms of support and how, you know, up till now, really?
Okay.
And I want to say that my guest is Diane Wilson, who is from Sea Drift, Texas, where she, you're hearing about, she stood up because she cares about the toxicity in the water, and she stood up against the authorities and the corporations. So do continue the story, Diane.
Okay. Predominantly, like I said, I'm a fisherman, so I worked with the fishermen to get their support. And I know the chemical companies, that was one of the things that they feared, because when if you find a permit and you go to a state agency and when you can say that you have commercial fishermen, and these are the people downstream, these are the people that live there, what they eat, the fish that they eat, it affects them, that it catch, that affects them. And so it's very important when you can get the community, and in my instance it was commercial fishermen. And so what the company ended up doing was they hired my cousin, who was one of the primary spokespersons for the fishermen. And the company turned around and hired him for $65,000 a year just to undermine me. So I had this cousin who was following me everywhere, just trying to get information from me and telling the industry and trying to kind of undercut my support with the fishermen. And eventually, and I think it was hard with the Anglo fishermen because – And this was what most of the community was because they are the fishermen are in very dire straits or are having a crisis anyway, and so they were very depressed and apathetic and felt like one person couldn't make a difference and they had lost too many fights themselves with regulations. And so eventually I focused on the Vietnamese shrimpers, and after the Vietnam War a large, probably over 100 families of Vietnamese fishermen came into Sea Drift, and there had been quite a bit of problems and misunderstandings and miscommunication. And I think at one time they had almost had some kind of little war, and I think 60 Minutes came down and did something, and because there was boat burnings, a man got shot, and houses got burns, and the Klansmen tried to come in. So it was a crazy time. But this was about 10 years after that, and I got the Vietnamese shrimpers to back me. And I remember I had this huge demonstration. I bet I had 200 Vietnamese shrimpers, and they were demonstrating with me in Texas against the Taiwanese plant. And I remember I had a Houston reporter came down. He said that was the most bizarre thing, seeing Vietnamese shrimpers protesting Taiwanese chemical company on a Texas shore. And so it was. But I got wonderful support from the Vietnamese shrimpers. And like I said, and eventually I fought their permits and took it to federal court, had it on appeals, and had effectively stopped their discharge. And little beknownst to me, though, is what really goes on in the agencies, is that they were discharging without a permit. And the EPA knew it, state knew it, Formosa knew it, and it was just like their little joke on me, the naive citizen who thinks everybody is going to live by the letter of the law and they're going to obey federal law because these are state and federal agencies, when the fact is that they don't. They do what suits them. And what suited them was that Formosa was going to get their discharge and get their permit. And so when I found out they were discharging without a permit and everybody knew it and nobody cared, I did the most outrageous thing I could think of.
Yeah, I just want to understand what is Formosa exactly.
Okay, Formosa Plastics is a PVC company, is owned by a man. His name is YC Wong. He's probably the 11th richest man in the world, and he is from Taiwan, and he is their largest petrochemical industrial giant over there. And matter of fact, he came to Texas because he was kicked out of Taiwan. I think he wanted to build like a 10 million-dollar chemical plant. He already had about eight others up there, and they were so fed up over there. And this was a time when there was still military rule. So it took a lot for 2,000 of the Taiwanese villagers to throw a protest against Y.C. Wong, who was a very powerful man. And that made him so angry that he said he was not going to build there any longer, that he was going to take his plants elsewhere. And so he came to Texas, and we just embraced him. We just gave him everything we could think about giving him.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting also that that the Anglo people you said wouldn't stand up at all. And did they ever? And that the Vietnamese did. That in itself is, I don't know.
Yes.
I'm just curious what the relationships were like, because between the Vietnamese and other people.
Well, I
the
know,
white folks.
Is that
what the racial mix mostly is?
Yeah, there's Hispanic and a lot of Anglo and like I said, the Vietnamese. And in the beginning, like I said, about it's probably been about 15 or no, it's been more that I'm trying to think how many years ago. But it's been a few years back. There, like I said, there was quite a lot of tensions because. It was after the Vietnam War, and Seadrift is not a rich town, and they don't make a lot of money. And times were already hard, and out of the blue, 100 Vietnamese families showed up. And it was like, I blame the people that were trying to make a profit off the Vietnamese. I blame agencies who would not get involved because nobody bothered to help make this transition. Nobody bothered to tell the Vietnamese what type of fishing rules and standards and kind of culture they had. It was just like fend for yourself. Mm-hmm. And so naturally the Vietnamese, they worked very hard and were, for example, and were before if an Anglo crabber, because they came in originally as crabbers. When they came in, like the original crabbers would use like 200 crab traps. And when the Vietnamese came in, they would use like 600. So it was like their effort like quadrupled. And like they worked. They were like monumental at putting out effort. And eventually it came to, well, Anglo crabber said, "You put your crab, you're putting your crab traps too close to mine," and so they get a misunderstanding. Nobody wants to get involved. The sheriffs don't want to get involved. The Parks and Wildlife don't want to get involved. So eventually, it came to words. It came to a fight. It came to a shooting. Mm-hmm. And once they had a shooting, it was just houses got burnt, boats mm-hmm. got burnt. It was a free for all. It was a free for all, and then the silly Klansmen came in and they wanted to take advantage of the situation, and they tried to march in Seadrift, and to Seadrift's good credit, they told him just take their act and just walk on, but eventually, and it's taken generation, and it's like the next generation, it's amazing how it has. They've integrated themselves, and now, and like I said, the Vietnamese ended up being the strongest advocates I had.
Well, this is quite the story. So go on, because I interrupted you just as you were about to tell me about sinking your boat.
Oh.
You were just starting to tell about that.
Well,
so
like
that's
I said,
really
I had appealed all the permits and found out they were discharging illegally anyway. So I thought of the most shocking, the most outrageous act I could do, because nobody was shocked by the fact that this was going on. And it was like old hat. It was like, who cares? It's like, this is the way it goes. We don't have any hope anyway. This is what goes on.
People getting sick in the town, by the way, from eating the fish and being around?
We have quite a bit of cancer in that community. We have, I know, my son is autistic, and the the people that take care of special ed kids says that is one of the largest areas where there is childhood a slowness of development. And on their own, they started asking questions about if they had been contaminated or had grown up or had been born near chemical plants. Mm-hmm. So we've got quite a bit of problems, and there has never been a health study. And even with the mercury underwater Superfund site where the shrimpers shrimp daily. And but eventually, like I said, I attempted to sink the shrimp boat up on top of their illegal discharge and went out in the middle of a freak norther, a storm blew in, and some, I guess my cousin who had been bought out by the company told the Coast Guard, and at midnight I got three boatloads, two cutters of Coast Guard show up, and they say I am a terrorist on the high seas, and $500,000 in penalties, 19 years in the federal penitentiary. And that's what they were threatening me with, and I was determined to sink it anyway, but the shrimpers got scared, because since I'd removed the motor, I had to be towed, and so I had the shrimpers got scared about towing me, because the Coast Guard said, we'll confiscate your boat. We'll send you to the pen. But eventually, even though that happened, I had a large number of shrimpers hear about it, and it was Anglos, American, Vietnamese. They all suddenly showed up in the middle of the bay and did a demonstration, and it caught the Associated Press caught the story. It was in the papers, and the company said they were sick and tired of me and my stunts. So I got zero discharge from them.
Oh, great. So now they're not discharging any more waste in that area.
Well, what that actually means is I got them first to do a study to see if they could do it. Then we got them to do, they're down to 32% reduction of their waste stream. But the thing that is with companies, you have to get them down to zero. You got to remove their pipeline, because I've got 32% reduction. Yet with the other remaining, they are being investigated by the FBI for forging their wastewater permit.
Wow. This is a very inspiring story for those who think that people can't make a difference. It's really inspiring, and I think I'm really thrilled to meet you, and I'm really glad you didn't have to go to prison and that you finally got some support.
Yeah. We're trying to launch a national movement for zero discharge, and if anyone thinks that they can't do it, they can, and they can demand zero discharge.
I wonder what kept you going all this time with so little support. In fact, you said your marriage fell apart, your family was rejecting you, and we've talked about all the support you didn't have. What kept you going?
Well, I think I was fortunate to have lived in one place my entire life. So I had a very strong identity with water in the bay, and being a fisherman is a way of life. And I think if you have a sense of place, you have a sense of, it's got an identity, it's got a personality. And it was like, whether it was one of my kids or my mother, it was like, it was not something I could ever let go or that I could ever give up on. And so when things got bad, it was that personality, that sense of place that drew me back. And so that was it.
A connection.
That's right. It's a connection with a place is very important. Yeah.
Do you want to leave a contact for how you can be reached?
Yes, they can reach me at Diane Wilson, Seadrift, Texas. You may give a phone number. Or box number, you can write me, box 340 in Seadrift, Texas, that's zip 77983. Or you can do email, wilsonalamobay@aol.com.
Okay, Diane Wilson, Seadrift, Texas. I imagine that will work, being
yes.
Such a small town.
Yes.
Seadrift, Seadrift, Texas. What's the zip?
77983.
Okay, well, thank you so much. Diane Wilson, thanks for your work, and thanks for the interview.
That's quite right.
My name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening.